Radioactive is made possible in part by the Alamoosuc Lodge, a bed and breakfast with indoor and outdoor space for weddings, receptions, retreats, and meetings amid the diverse wildlife of Alamoosuc Lake in Orland. AlamoosucLodge.com.
This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for October 14, 2004. Today, an unemployment action in Bangor. Cherryfield Foods has announced its ban on aerial pesticide spraying in response to a potential lawsuit, and an upcoming talk by a woman from El Salvador taking part in the monitoring of U.S. elections in Miami. But first, this.
Last week, the FBI seized a pair of servers in the UK that are used by Indy Media, the independent news gathering collective, after serving a subpoena in the U.S. on Indy Media's hosting firm, Rackspace. And we're joined today by phone by David of Pittsburgh Indy Media, who's been involved in the issue, who's going to give us an update of what's been happening, including some recent news. Welcome, David.
Hi there.
So, David, can you just give a brief kind of overview of what some of the theories are about why the FBI did this, what the other countries are that are involved, and then bring us up to date?
Sure. Well, first I want to say that it's interesting. The hard drives were actually returned yesterday, and Rackspace, the company that had handed over the hard drives to perhaps the FBI, we don't know that for sure. But in any case, Rackspace sent an email message to the Indy Media tech saying that they got the hard drives back and they would be putting them again online shortly. And that all they were able to say was that they complied with a court order and they will pass along any more information as that becomes available and as they are allowed to do.
And they're being prohibited from giving more information because of the laws surrounding the agencies and the seizure of this equipment. They've actually got a gag order, correct?
Yeah, although even to call it a gag order, we can't say for sure. The legal terms will vary from one country to the next. And specifically, the lawyers who are supporting the Indy Media effort, the Indy Media Global effort, the EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, say that they can't even say for certain that it is a gag order as such. Anyway, the long and the short of it is all they can tell us is that they can't tell us anything. Meanwhile, Indy Media Techs are treating the hard drives as compromised and, you know, will not be used ever again to support those websites.
Because they're afraid of what the FBI or whoever may have done while they were in their possession to them?
That's correct.
You mentioned that there may be a couple of theories that people are floating in absence of any more concrete information about why this may have been done?
Sure. The two most popular theories that came out of the gate early on last week were one, that it had to do with photographs that were posted on Nantes Indie Media, photographs showing two undercover cops. The second was that there was allegedly an investigation into Italy Indie Media for its quote-unquote supporting terrorism. Let me mention the second thing first, because today Italy Indy Media learned that an investigation in Bologna was in fact underway, and the investigation was into the Informal Anarchist Federation, FAI, and they were investigating alleged bomb threats delivered to the president of the EU Commission, Romano Prodi. So, according to what they were told, Italy in the media, that is, the public prosecutor for Bologna issued a request for information to some U.S. authorities. Whether that was the FBI or not, you know, is uncertain. Anyway, the request for information concerned some of the posts on Italy in the media. However, they did not specifically say that the servers or the hard drives on those servers should be seized in any way. So it would seem that the U.S. authorities, assuming that it's the FBI, say, that did it, went beyond the requirements that were issued by the request for information by then issuing an order to the UK authorities to hand over the hard drive.
David, we're going to actually have to end and not even really scratch the surface of this really complicated issue. I think one of the things that is important for people to know is that the FBI has not responded to our requests, and I'm sure in many other people's requests for information, but they, other than to say that they are acting on behalf of a third party in this, another country, perhaps. But you have information about where people can get the whole story and keep up to date and also get involved if they want to support indie media. Can you give that information?
Yes. First, the global indie media site is keeping constant updates about what's happening, and that's www.indymedia.org. But then a group of indie media volunteers and the UK indie media have organized a solidarity declaration where people can sign on, and that is at solidarity.indymedia.org.uk.
Great. Thank you very much. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, it's also worth noting that at the European Social Forum right now, thousands of people are turning out and are signing letters of support for indie media, as have numerous journalist associations and free speech organizations around the world.
Right, there does seem to be a lot of belief that that indie media may be being harassed because it has become so successful being independent, and that seems to be some of the information that people are posting and the opinions that people are posting. But thank you for joining us, David. That's David from Pittsburgh Indie Media Center.
This morning, the day after the presidential debates touched on jobs, unemployment, education, and health care, over 50 people gathered at the four corners of State and Broadway in Bangor in a symbolic unemployment line. Union members, laid-off workers, students, veterans, members of social and faith-based organizations, and others stood with pink slips to draw attention, organizers said, to the more than 8 million Americans who are looking for work and cannot find it. Today's action was modeled after a pink slip demonstration on September 1st at the Republican National Convention, in which nearly 8,000 formed a 3-mile-long line from Wall Street to Madison Square Garden. Maine has lost over 18,000 manufacturing jobs since Bush took office. According to the Bureau of Labor, 31,859 people were unemployed in Maine in August 2004, a 42% increase during the Bush administration.
My name is Joy Royal Nevers. I'm an IBEW electrician at a local 1253 in Augusta, Maine, and I live in Brewer, Maine. We're at the corner of Broadway and State Street in Bangor, and on every corner there are displaced workers, people that are maybe displaced depending on this election, where we have one person who is talking to us over a loudspeaker, a bullhorn, excuse me, about the various things we are supporting, the things that we're looking for in this next administration.
Which are?
Good paying jobs to support families, education, health care.
Michael Woodbury, I'm from Bangor. I used to work over at Easton Fine Paper. I'm one of the displaced workers there. I mean, I was there for 26 years. And, you know, there's no manufacturing jobs here in the area. You know, people have got to take notice that, you know, you got Sylvania who's moving to Mexico. As far as I'm concerned, when the high schools graduate on graduation day, they might as well put a bus right in front of the high school and just ship all of our kids right out of state, because that's where we're going.
What was your reaction to the debates yesterday that talked about the economy and jobs quite a bit?
Well, Mr. Bush has not impressed me at all for the last 4 years. And I'm still supporting Kerry, and I urge everybody to support Kerry, not only in this state, but across this great country of ours.
Doris Phillips, and I'm from Bangor, and I'm one of these laid-off people.
And why are you here today?
To let people know that this disgusting thing happens to workers. They just tell us we don't have a job anymore, and we feel so disillusioned, and we don't know if we did something wrong, when in fact, we're good workers. We just can't keep jobs in this state. I think there's no respect for the employees. I think there's a big lack of respect for employees. I've been trying to help a friend of mine. Why she lost her job and trying to get help in the state level, and the doors are all closed. It's remarkable. I couldn't believe it. I thought, you know, a few phone calls, get some help. No, it's blocked off. And if we try to persist, the word is harassment. They tell us we're harassing.
What is your reaction to the debates last night that talked about the economy and jobs quite a bit and trade?
I think Bush is a little, he's really out of touch. He's not really conscious about this country at all. He's a bully. He's a classified bully as far as I'm concerned. And he does not have a clue. He's a rich boy, never had to hold a job. Daddy bought everything. He doesn't have a clue what we're going through. He doesn't know what no health care means.
It's important to not just to the you know, think of the presidential election. It's really important to look at all levels of politics, that everybody, all of them, right down from the federal government right down to the city and towns, be responsible for the Americans, for their citizens, to pass legislation that is going to help all Americans at all levels, and veto what's not good, because it needs to benefit all Americans, not just the few.
What about that issue of the gap between the rich and the poor? How do you think that's being addressed right now?
I don't think middle class and poor are being addressed. I think that the attention is too, if you've got money, you got it all.
I think you only have two classes. You have the haves and the have-nots. And that's
and the division line is getting wider and wider.
Wider and wider.
Yeah, the middle class is lost. The middle class is gone.
Yeah, either you have money or you don't.
Middle class because of all of this.
I mean, I worked for 26 years and I thought I was going to be there forever.
And my brother-in-law, and because of the manufacturing, because of the line of work I do, when all of these manufacturing, industrial, and commercial jobs keep disappearing, my work disappears.
What do you think are some of the important issues that the administration now or to come should be focusing on?
Jobs, teaching our children. He keeps saying that we're no jobs left behind, but every time you turn around, after school programs are being cut. You know, our manufacturing's moving out of the country faster than water can run down a bridge, down a river.
And the extracurricular activities, they're so quick in cutting them in our school systems, but you'll find that the activities that kids do other than during the school day help make healthy children. Really, and I'm not talking sports, just sports. I'm talking the Girl Scouts. I'm talking academic groups. I'm talking music programs. These are all being sliced, and these make healthy Americans. They make tax-paying Americans, more productive citizens, because there's so much more to life than going to school, and when you get out, there's more so much more to life than just going to work, but if you don't have those outside interests developed at a younger age, when they get older, they're not there.
It's terrible because we're probably throwing away a Beethoven or Laurence Olivier or Steinbeck. We're throwing them away.
What did you think about when he was asked, Bush was asked, or they both were asked, about jobs and job loss and the concern with them going overseas and then the whole concern with sweatshop labor taking it, but he switched so quickly to education as the answer for people.
Mr. Bush?
Yes.
Well, Mr. Bush, you know, that's what I figured. Mr. Bush does not have a clue what's going on in my life. I know, should he even care, I guess, but, you know, I'm part of what I used to think was middle America, but it's just, he doesn't have a clue. He just doesn't understand what it's like to have to get up and go to work every day. You know, if I had a silver spoon in my mouth and Daddy was sending me to the best colleges and I was, you know, just sat home stateside during a war, you know.
My name's Ron Green. I'm the president of the Bangor Professional Firefighters Association. I'm here, number one, to support John Kerry, and I'm here to support laid-off workers. We don't need any more laid-off workers, especially in the state of Maine. We've lost too many. And we also got to support support defeating question one, which is coming up on the ballot November 2nd, because that's going to mean hundreds of laid off workers in the state of Maine.
My name is Karen Somm, and I work at Home Co-op, where I've worked for over 20 years. And I'm here today to support Carrie and Edwards, actually. And I feel very strongly because working at home, I see every day the results of the kinds of policies, economic policies that Bush has put in. Our homeless shelters are full. Our food pantry shelves are empty. People from neighboring communities have volunteered to bring in food from surrounding stores, the ones that are time expired. And every morning there's a waiting line of people to pick those things up.
I'm Rod Gillespie. I'm with the Maine State Building Trades Council, and we're here to show, to tell the people in the state of Maine about the job loss, not only in Maine but all across the nation. We've lost around 18,000 manufacturing jobs in the state of Maine and over 3 million nationwide, and we think it's important that the people in the state understand what the Bush administration is doing to our economy and the jobs. And, you know, in addition, the rise in health care costs, gasoline prices, I mean, everything's going right through the roof. And this president, if you listen to the debates, you'd think that he believes in what he's talking about. And he's probably one of the scariest people I've ever heard speak.
I'm Kendall Dunbar. I'm here with the Greater Bangor Area Central Labor Council and protesting against the election, Mr. Bush, the keeper of the rich. He needs to understand that there are a lot more poor and working class people here, and we are going to vote, and we're going to send a signal to him and the rest of the world that we need change. We need jobs and health care and get people out of Iraq and take care of our own country.
What is your reaction to the discussion yesterday on the economy and on free trade and jobs?
He just doesn't get it. You know, Mr. Bush is, I don't know where he is. He just doesn't understand what's going on in this country or doesn't care. I'm not sure which it is.
My name is Jack McKay. I'm president of the Greater Bangor Area Central Labor Council. This is a debate. This is what we're doing today, is to show that there's real live issues for people in the Bangor area and for the Penobscot region. There's things, you know, this is not about John Kerry versus George Bush and, you know, how they are personally or issues like that. That's ridiculous. This is about policies that have a real impact here. The policies that George Bush chooses, the policies that John Kerry chooses, make a difference here. We've lost over 12,000 jobs directly related to trade policies. That matters. It's the policies in Washington, D.C. that matters. Last night in the debate, George Bush said that Americans don't want health insurance that's going to cost $7,700 for a family. Well, that's $641 a month per family. That's the cheapest health insurance that I've heard of. That's high-quality insurance that is available for the Senate and the Congress. That's things that we'd love to have. Now, I don't really care that much about who's doing it, but we need that kind of cheap, affordable health insurance for our families now so that people don't have to choose between food and medicine. Those are the issues that are at stake here, and it's going to make a real life difference for us here.
Who's represented here? What sort of,
We have over 15 different unions. We've got a crowd of over 50 folks. This is just a tremendous outpouring, and it just shows that people, you know, really care about what's going on in this election. This is a pink slip rally. People all have pink slips. They're lined up, you know, up almost over the horizon here on State Street in Bangor. And it's a great thing that people are ready to come out and you know, help build a better country, help work for the everybody, so that everybody in America gets decent health care, decent jobs, has a real social safety net. These are the things that we need, and this is what we should have in the richest country in the world. Well, I think two things that really came out last night in the debate. One is the fact that take-home pay for Americans is at its lowest level since they started taking statistics in 1929. The portion of our economy that goes to people who work is the smallest it's been since 1929. The second thing is, you know, Bush talked about these policies that he wanted to see happen. It's Republicans control the presidency, the Senate, the House, and by all accounts, the Supreme Court. And to say that he'd like to see policies happen, but they haven't happened in a Republican-controlled administrative branch, House and Senate, is ridiculous. We've had you know, 2 years of complete Republican control, and it's been absolutely disastrous to Americans. 5 million more unemployed, uninsured. 5 million uninsured. 36% increase on health insurance. Real incomes decreased by $1,500. The record for this Republican-controlled country is absolutely horrible for Americans. We've seen, you know, a class war on Americans. And the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer like never before. It's changing. Things are changing. The rich are getting richer at a faster pace than before. And it's due to the policies of George Bush. And those things have to stop.
Cherryfield Foods announced last week that it will stop the aerial pesticide spraying of the blueberry fields it owns or manages. Cherryfield Foods is the largest blueberry grower in Maine, and in August, four environmental groups declared their intent to sue, asserting that Cherryfield Foods had violated the Federal Clean Water Act with their aerial spraying of pesticides. Will Everett, of the Maine field organizer of the Toxics Action Center, one of the groups involved with filing the intent to sue, spoke with us earlier today about the environmental group's successful efforts to get the aerial spraying stopped. Will Everett.
Well, the great news is that we didn't have to file a lawsuit. But I can take a step back that we, for years, residents in down East Maine have been complaining about drift from aerial spraying coming from Cherryfield Foods and the companies that they hire to aerial spray their blueberries. And if you've seen pictures of helicopters spraying in Vietnam, it's something like that. Helicopters come over the horizon, spray blueberry fields with toxic pesticides. Unfortunately, the pesticides don't always hit their target. They often drift away from the blueberry fields and into our waters, lakes, and streams, and more dangerously into residences. We have reports of residents being hit by spray, of their children playing nearby these fields being hit by these toxic pesticides. And for years, the Board of Pesticide Control, the state agency that's supposed to oversee this, had done nothing to about the drift. Residents then called us because the state hadn't been doing anything about it. So we at Toxics Action Center were looking into the issue along with the National Environmental Law Center, another environmental group in the state called Environment Maine, the Sierra Club, and a group called Beyond Pesticides. And what we found was a smoking gun. We found that the state had done testing to prove that the pesticides were going straight from the helicopters into our waterways, which is a direct violation of the Clean Water Act. So we began to initiate a Clean Water Act citizen suit, which is when the government isn't doing its job, citizens can enforce the law. So we initiated that suit. The company had 60 days to come into compliance before we filed the suit, and right at the last minute, we got a letter from Cherryfield Foods saying that they will no longer aerial spray, which was very encouraging to us, and we didn't have to file the suit, so that is a good win for Maine's environment.
Cherryfield is the second largest blueberry grower in the state. What do you expect the effect might be on other growers?
Cherryfield Foods is the largest
grower
in the state, and it's a international owned by an international company. The second largest, Wyman Brothers, still uses and still plans on using aerial spraying, and we hope that Cherryfield Foods will lead the industry as an example, and that other companies like Wyman Brothers will follow suit from this. What this shows is that you. Companies don't need aerial spraying in order to do their jobs and grow blueberries here in Maine.
Now, is this a permanent a permanent ban on aerial spraying from Cherryfield, or is it just for this next growing season? There's talk of a plan where they're implementing ground spraying, but is has this been established as a permanent ban for that company?
That is a great question, and it's a question that we ourselves have, and in fact are trying to set up a meeting with Cherryfield Foods to get talk over with them their plans, make sure they're committed to never spraying toxic pesticides aerially again, and we hope that from that meeting that we will get that commitment. Stopping aerial spraying is just one piece of the puzzle, one piece of stopping our exposure to toxic pesticides. Cherryfield will still be using these pesticides. We hope that there won't be as much drift, off-target drift from the pesticides because they won't be aerial spraying. But in the end, we want to make sure that in the long run that our overall exposure is reduced. And that means that, you know, overall we're going to be continuing working to see if we could cut pesticide use and pesticide exposure in Maine. Beyond just working with Cherryfield to make sure they don't aerial spray.
Great. And finally, just quickly then, the significance of this particular announcement and the precedent it would set for any actions concerning other blueberry growers and any other industries that use aerial spraying in the state or the country for that matter.
I think this is a great precedent. I think that Cherryfield Foods can become a real leader in setting the example that to grow blueberries, you don't need to spray toxic pesticides from the air. And so that, and just as they are the largest blueberry grower in Maine, this is real significant for the people that live near the fields that they manage, as well as the lakes, ponds, rivers, and streams that run near the fields that they manage.
Do you think that there will be any other lawsuits, though, against any other
sprayers? It's our hope to meet with Wyman Brothers to work to convince them not to aerial spray. However, if we find examples, we find other smoking guns of aerial spraying that's happening where the spray and the toxic pesticides are going directly from the helicopters into our waterways. We know that we have the Clean Water Act as a tool to enforce the letter of the law and the spirit of the law and keep these toxins out of our waterways.
This Sunday, October 17th, the U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities Network will present social justice organizers up from El Salvador, Teresa Perez and Bangor native Jesse Kate Chinoy at 6 p.m. at the Unitarian Universal Church at Park Street in Bangor. There will be a dinner and talk on reclaiming our democracy north and south. We have with us here on the phone Catherine Cates from PICA, Peace Through Inter-American Community Action. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you.
Teresa Perez is part of an international election team who will be monitoring the elections in Florida. Can you talk about the significance of her coming here and this event also in Bangor?
Absolutely. The focus of the talk is stealing elections and stealing economies and how we can work together as networks of allied communities north and south to reclaim our democracy. And Teresa, it's a tour that they're on, and we are a stop on the tour that will culminate in Florida, like you said. Teresa will be part of an international election observer delegation. And it's especially significant because Dick Cheney pointed to El Salvador very proudly, the elections in 1984, as a model for Iraq of democratic elections. And those elections featured clear ballot boxes with soldiers with guns watching how people voted, people needing to be to vote or they would be summarily executed, and anything but free and fair. And she also knows a lot about stealing economies because she's been part of the social justice movement in El Salvador for a long time, resisting the assault of the wealthy on the rest. Both of these issues are looking more and more like the issues in our own country. And so they'll be talking about those and giving us all something to think about.
Great. For more information, where can people call or go to?
people can call PICA at 947-4203.
And again, that's this Sunday, October 17th, at the Unitarian Universalist Church at 120 Park Street in Bangor at 6 o'clock, is that right?
Yes, 6 p.m.
A dinner and then a talk, and we'll be bringing more coverage of this on the next Radioactive. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you so much.
And you've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco. Matt Murphy engineered today's program. Thanks for listening and acting, and join us again next Thursday at 4 for Radioactive.
Radioactive is made possible in part by Artisan Builders, providing environmental design, construction, and renovation for homeowners and local businesses since 1992, 525-7740.